there, and welcome back to Take One, the podcast that brings you just one meaningful page of Talmud each day. And if you listened to our episode yesterday, you know that this is a very special week here on Take One, not only because it is almost Purim, but also because we are debuting a brand new and amazing podcast here in Tablet Magazine called Sivan Says, Taking the Torah Personally. It stars the one and only Sivan Rav Meir, an Israeli journalist, Torah teacher, mother of five, and really, for my money, the most brilliant and inspiring Torah teacher we have right now. So if you like Torah or learning about Jewish texts or just seeing how all these very ancient books are very relevant to our modern life, which if you're listening to this podcast, of course you do, then I know you'll enjoy the debut episode of Sivan Says. Here it is. Hey there, I'm Leah Leibowitz, and before I even tell you what this podcast is called, and before I introduce you to its absolute star, I want to ask you a question. What do you think about when you think about the Torah or the Hebrew Bible, the five books of Moses? You know the one. I'm willing to bet that if you're not, you know, overly religious, you've just read a little bit here and there, you think, yeah, man, it's probably a smart book, probably a complicated book, probably kind of an ancient, archaic book. The purpose of this podcast, Sivan Says, Taking the Torah Personally, is to convince you that there is no book more wonderful, more precious, more relevant to your life right now than that very, very old book. And there's no better guide to the world of Torah than the star of this show. She's an Israeli journalist, broadcaster, Torah teacher, mother of five, an all-around genius. Sivan Rav Meir, welcome to your show.
Thank you very much for exaggerating, Liel. Thank you very much. It's not me. It's the Torah. You know, I'm not perfect, but the Torah is. And it's, yeah, it's super relevant, especially now during, you know, everything we're facing now together, the challenges we're facing together. And I think as a journalist for years, the best source when you want to cover Israeli reality, current events in the world, it's the best perspective. The best way to understand the world is to read the Torah and then look once again at the world and see new things. That's what we're about to do right here, right now.
Baruch Hashem. So look, we are just a tad late to the party. The Torah reading, we read the Torah in a weekly cycle of 50-something portions a week. Each portion is called a parasha, which is the weekly Torah portion. And we here will be following that cycle very, very closely. So before we jump right in, tell us, where are we? What's previously on Torah? What did we miss? Where are we in the great big story of the Israelites?
So we're starting the book of Vayikra, the third book. We just finished Bereshit, Genesis, and Exodus, Sefer Shmot. We are out of Egypt. And thank God the world was created. And our ancestors, they came to Egypt. And that now, after so many miracles and receiving the Torah at Mount Sinai and building the golden calf and building the Mishkan, our spiritual center in the middle of the desert, now it's, in a way, people might think it's the boring book. It's the book of, you know, the way things work on a daily basis, 40 years, wandering the desert on our way to the Holy Land. We'll prove, okay? Be with us. And throughout the, you know, I think next 2 months, we will prove to you how fascinating Sefer Vayikra is. But today, there's always an exception, you know. As Jews, I think we must be connected to the real pulse. And what's really going on in the world right now in the month of Adar is Purim. Purim's coming up and we cannot ignore Purim. So every week, I think we'll discuss the parsha together. This week, you know, as an Israeli, I'm not so polite. Maybe I should ask your permission. If it's okay, I think Purim, we must focus on the real holy day. And once again, especially now, I think this year, everything, there's a new perspective, new meaning. Everything becomes deeper in a way. Everything we celebrate, everything we do, not just as Israelis, as Jews all over the world. So this Purim this year is extremely important.
Okay, I completely agree, but it's also extremely difficult because, you know, Purim is the festival of happiness, of joy. You're commanded to be so drunk that you can't even tell the difference between the great Mordechai and the evil Haman. Personally, being very, very drunk so as not to notice things is something I'm very good at. But, you know, a lot of us still very much heartbroken and traumatized by the massacre of October 7th. think that maybe, you know, maybe this year we should tone it down. Maybe this year we should even skip it altogether. So I want you to do two things. First of all, give us the short version. What is Purim for those of us who may have, you know, slept in Hebrew school? And then tell us why this year, before you give us the teaching of this week's episode, before you give us the real lowdown, tell us why Purim matters this year, maybe more than it ever has.
People, you know, ask, how can we celebrate Purim? I want to ask, how can we not celebrate Purim this year? I spoke to, you know, all the time, I'm in touch with so many families, bereaved families, families of wounded soldiers, kidnapped young people that are now in Gaza, bereaved families, evacuees, people who are not, you know, from the north and the south, now in hotels in Yerushalayim or Tel Aviv. And they all say, we want to celebrate this year. We cannot ignore, we don't want to delete Purim, you know. It's part of the solution. Purim is not a problem. Purim, the solution we need. It's the remedy. It's the cure. It's what we're supposed to do. Now, if you see, it depends, you know, how do you see Purim? What is Purim? So as you mentioned, maybe, you know, in kindergarten, you think it's just a, you know, a tale about a queen and a king, Queen Esther and King Ahasuerus and the mean Haman, and that's it. It's just a plot. So that's it. I can definitely agree. It's not important. But if you understand the essence of the story, meaning, tell me if, you know, it's maybe it sounds familiar. There's ultimate evil in the world. Haman, Amalek, also Persian, Iranian agent trying to kill all the Jews in the world. Our answer is Jewish unity and Jewish identity, Jewish pride. And in a miraculous way, but no, I would say in a hidden miracle. It's like something rational, like, for example, 6 Days War, or for example, 3 years after the Holocaust, out of the ashes, Israel was founded. Do you see it as a miracle? I see it as a miracle, but it's also a very rational scenario. It's not something, you know, it's not like splitting the sea or seeing, you know, the 10 plagues. It's something else. So in a way, Purim teaches us to see the miracles in our daily life and to work on Jewish unity and Jewish identity and Jewish pride against an enemy that wants to destroy and in a way kill all of us. We are focused on the differences among the different sectors and the way we define each other. The enemy, Haman / Hamas, ISIS, they don't see the nuances. They see this entity called Judaism, and they don't want it in this world. And we must ask ourselves then and now, if ultimate evil sees me as its enemy, what's the message? What am I supposed to do? What's my response? I think it's extremely relevant right here, right now, you know, watching the Oscar from Israel or the, you know, the president of Harvard or MIT or Penn University, listening to the news, the commentators. Sometimes when I listen to sources, even in that White House, I think the message of Purim is extremely relevant if you want moral clarity, if you want to understand there's right and wrong, you know, darkness and light and true and false, and you want to be on the right and bright side of history, read Megillat Esther and you'll understand the real news.
Amazing, and so it falls to you to teach us about Megillat Esther.
So first of all, here's the story, if you forgot, or maybe you're listening in for the first time. It's exciting. You know, I'm from Yerushalayim, from Israel. We are all familiar with the content of the Megillah Esther's scroll, but maybe we have listeners here. You know, maybe it's their first time. So once upon a time, you know, in a palace, there was a Jewish queen called Esther. She was married to a king called Ahasuerus. In a way, there was a very, I would say, supreme minister called Haman. He decided to kill all the Jews in the kingdom. And that was the first time Esther had to reveal the fact she is a Jewish girl. Her husband, you know, he knew nothing about her identity. She decided, that was, I think, the game changer. When Esther decided, I'm part of my nation, although I can hide my identity, I can save myself and, you know, ignore my people out there. I don't want to do it. And you know, when her uncle Mordechai, he asked her to help, he didn't beg. It's very interesting to say. I think that's one of the scenes that are very important for Jews today. We do not beg for help. Mordechai was very, I think he came with a lot of self-confidence, with a lot of, you know, Jewish pride. He told her, listen, Esther, the Jewish people will survive. It's going to be okay. It's your decision. If you will remain silent, you will be forgotten. We will find, you know, with God's help, the Jewish people will live forever. It's your decision. I mean, do you want to be a spectator or a player? Do you want to become active and do something about it? And her decision was, yeah, I want to do something. She asked him to gather all the Jews, Lech Knos et Kol HaYehudim, Jewish unity, to pray, to daven, to fast this week on Thursday, Ta'anit Esther, day of fasting. I'll just say in Israel, many mothers of the hostages, they said, don't call it this year. Don't call it Ta'anit Esther. Call it Ta'anit Romy. I know Romy's mother, Romy Bat Merav. Merav is the mother. Romy is 23. She's now in Gaza. And we will fast not just for Esther that was, you know, captive in a foreign palace, for Romy that is now under foreign regime, evil regime in Gaza. So many of the, not just Ta'anit Romy, it's also Ta'anit Daniela, Ta'anit Naama, names of Israeli girls, you know, young soldiers or girls that were celebrating, dancing at the festival, the Nova party, and they're now there. So in a way, I think it's meaningful when we speak about, you know, Ta'anit Esther this year, it's going to be really meaningful this coming Thursday. And then I think what really changed Haman's decision to kill us was the way Esther built her plan. We were out there, we the Jewish people, were praying, davening for the first time together with Jewish, I would say, solidarity and unity. She was in there with the king, Achashverosh, and in a way that is, as I said, not miraculous, in a normal way, you know, in a hidden way, there's a real king. It's not King Achashverosh, it's the real king, God, that was, you know, the real director of the whole plot. And at the end of the day, happy end comes when Esther is doing the right thing in there, in the palace. We are out there, the Jewish people. And at the end of the Megillah, it says, La Yehudim haita ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. The Jewish people had joy. They were happy and they had honor. They had, you know, they got their pride again, in a way. And they realized who they are, what's their mission. But it ends when they're still there in exile, diaspora in Shushan, in Persia. So it's not the end of the story. You know, Israel is the direction for them. But still, this story symbolizes, I think for us today, there are so many messages we can learn that are so relevant for what's going on right now.
It's interesting, though, because this is one of very, very, very few sources in our scriptures that don't mention God at all.
As a journalist, I identified with this text, I think, because God is hidden. And this is our mission to find him, you know, behind the scenes. He's there, always. He's always with us, you know, takes care of what's going on. But it's not like in the Torah, the scroll, it's a different type of text where you have to find your own Megillat Esther. By the way, in Hebrew, I won't teach you, your listeners, the real Ivrit right now, but yeah, Megillah, it's from the word Gilu, it reveals something. Esther is from the word hidden, to hide something. So this combination of Gilui v'Hester, of hidden things that are seen and not seen. Do you see him behind the scenes? And I once heard it from Rabbi Adin Steinzels. He said, we should all write our own Megillat Esther. It's our mission to look at your life, okay? From the day you were born until today, it's your Megillat Esther, okay? God is there with you. If you see him, sometimes you don't. But look at the Megillah. We read it in 15 or 20 minutes in shul when we go to synagogue to listen to the story. But in real life, it took 11 years. Do you see him always? You know, look at the last 11 years of your life. It's your Megillah. It's your plot. And I hope we will all have, just like in the real Megillah, a happy end. But it means we have to look and find and seek and search the messages. You know, sometimes it's hidden. That's a real message for us as modern Jews, yeah. I suggest now we'll go into the tachlas. Is it okay? four mitzvot, four commandments. When you look at Purim, there are many customs, like the costumes, like the hamantashen, the way you call it in English, in Ivris, in Yiddish. We call it oznei haman. Anyway, these are all customs, the real halakha, the real things you're supposed to do as responsible Jews. We have four missions. The first thing is seudat Purim, just to enjoy a festive meal with family, friends. That's it, a simple concept. We know on, you know, Leila Seder, Seder night, we do it, and then we do it with matzot. Why not doing it with bread 30 days earlier? A nice seudah during Sunday, during Purim, having a seudat Purim, drinking, singing, discussing the Megillah, and discussing the current Megillah that is now written. We're now writing a new chapter in the Bible, what's going on right now. That's the first easy mitzvah. Eat and be happy. The second mitzvah, the circle is now becomes wider. It's not just us, the intimate sphere, the family. It's the people surrounding us, the community, the friends. It's called Mishloach Manot, giving a gift, sending, or Shalach Manas in Ivris, giving a gift or a basket or something to a foreign person, to someone that is, it's not part of your family. Two edible items, basically, according to the halakha, and that's enough. You can give more mishlochim, more gifts. I think this year, try to be creative. Try to find someone maybe you're not in touch with, maybe an old person or that lives by himself. But maybe in Israel, there's a whole campaign going to families of hostages, going to hotels for the misplaced, the evacuees, going to wounded soldiers in hospitals. That's the right direction this year if you want to give mishloach manot. Really, that's the, I think, the task this year. The third circle is, after we were with the family members, now with the neighbors, community, now let's go even, you know, more to a wider circle, to those who are in need, matanot la'evyonim, giving gifts to the poor, those who are in lack, they don't have enough money, they can't afford themselves to celebrate Purim, help them, see them. That's the right direction. If you want to reach happiness, give, don't get. And once again, unfortunately, for so many people this year, the clock stopped on October 7th. Also financially, I mean, I help this year when I do matanot la'evyonim, when I try to find people that are really in need, they want to work and they can't. Things change for them in the north, in the south, in Israel. So once again, you have the opportunity maybe of supporting people that, you know, they need your help. It's a huge, your privilege to help others. And now the fourth circle, the Jewish nation. Megillat Esther, the fourth mitzvah is to read the scroll, to be connected to the wider story, to the big story, essential story. I just heard a beautiful definition this week from Rav Doron Perez. Unfortunately, his son this week was identified. The family thought he's in Gaza. They treated him as hostages, as a kidnapped soldier. And this week, unfortunately, they declared him a casualty of war. He was buried in Har Herzl, the military cemetery in Israel. His father gave a beautiful definition. He was asked, how can you celebrate Purim? He said, the best way for me is micro and micro, meaning the tiniest thing is to be focused on this moment right now. Yeah, I have to bury my son, to sit Shiva. I have to be focused on what I'm supposed to do as a father, as a husband, and as a bereaved father. The tiniest details, what's going on, this moment, right here, right now, this day. Micro mean it's the largest story ever. I'm part of the most magnificent. I'm part of the big Jewish story. I'm writing a chapter. I'm part of the Jewish nation, and I feel it with me. So in a way, when we read Megillat Esther, we all feel like we are a Mordechai and Esther right now, fighting ultimate evil, identifying ultimate evil, not just in Israel. When you fight anti-Semitism, when you explain, you know, our policy, part of, you know, Israel's advocacy, when you're connected, when you learn more Torah, every tiny thing you do there is part of our Iron Dome, in a way, it helps. So yeah, connecting yourself to this ancient text of the Megillah. I think these four, it's the prescription we need right now. Seriously, four things we can do this week on Sunday in order to help ourselves and the world. That's the Purim's cure, remedy for us.
So each episode of this here podcast will end with a practical takeaway, a bit of homework in the best way possible, something for our listeners to take with them into the week and to really, really ponder. This week, just to recap, it's going to be observe the four commandments of Purim. First of all, hold the Seudat Purim. Invite someone you haven't seen for a very, very long time. You know, hang with friends, have a good time, discuss everything that's going on in the world. You know you need someone to talk to. Second of all, do Shloach Manos. Reach out to someone who could use a basket full of delicious food, maybe something to drink as well. Have a good time with that. Third of all, charity. Give some matanot le'evyonim, some gifts for the poor, for those truly in need. Maybe it's a donation to a soup kitchen. Maybe it's just, you know, a little bit of money for someone in your neighborhood, in your life, who you know could use the help. And fourth of all, go hear the timeless story of how in every generation we are persecuted, and in every generation, with God's help, we prevail. And with that, there's only one thing to say to conclude this week's episode. Before we return next week, before we jump right in to the book of Leviticus, one of the most splendid and unbelievably misunderstood works of genius. And that thing is Sivan Rav Meir. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. May you have a happy Purim. Purim Sameach.
You've been listening to Sivan Says, taking the Torah personally. If you enjoyed the show, then please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're a brand new show and every single star helps, I promise. Sivan Says is a Tablet Studios production. The show is hosted by me, Leah Leibowitz, with the wonderful and insightful Sivan Rav Meir. It's produced and edited by Ellie Blyer and Josh Cross. Our team also includes Courtney Hazlett, Robert Scaramuccia, Quinn Waller, Stephanie Butnick, and Tanya Singer. For more information, go to tabletmag.com/Sivan Says. We will see you here next week. Until then, Lehitraot. Goodbye.